Yeah, you know what you can get me, Pee-wee?
What?
El Hombre.
That was a catastrophe.
I know.
That's a new low. Yeah. Roz is better.
El Hombre.
The natural meets Rudy meets... I don't even know how to describe it.
El Hombre.
It is that time, everybody. Every Tuesday at 5 o'clock, we bring in this man for a discussion on all things in the world of sports. He is the one, the only, El Hombre, Michael Bradley, with us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. How are you, man?
How's everybody doing?
Doing good. I imagine you're doing good. Philly's up 2-0, so you're feeling good about things, yeah?
So far, yeah. I mean, we can always fall apart, and they don't score any runs. So other than that, I'm feeling good.
Okay, how are you feeling? You were battling through some stuff.
I'm still hacking.
Really?
Still hacking. This cold, this cough won't go away.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you on that one.
I'm going to have to go to my neighbor's remedy that he gave me today. He's a bartender, so he said whiskey with some honey in it. So I'm going to have to do a little bit of that.
There you go. Go heavy on the whiskey. Then you wake up with a hangover, and then that's your biggest problem.
Yeah, it takes your mind off the cough.
I'm not going to drink a lot of whiskey. I may have just a little touch.
There you go.
I just like that last week. So I'm not going to be able to drink tomorrow. Well, why? What's tomorrow? It's Friday.
Exactly. I got to gear up for this Friday. I can't miss 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah,
blasphemy. People are going to start worrying. Bartenders are going to start worrying.
Hey, before we get into baseball and everything else going on in the world of sports, what was your did you watch the Masters at all?
I watched every stroke.
You think, I was asking this question of a couple people, including some hardcore, Mike Blauer is a very, very hardcore golfer and fan. I said, do you think you'd notice Scheffler on the street if he walked by you without a baseball hat? He said, no, probably not.
Without a baseball hat? No.
Yeah. And it was more about, the question, it was more about a superstar in golf. Like Tiger, maybe he's just a once in a generation type of individual for any sport for that matter, but for golf it feels like they've been trying to find the guy that's going to be the next Tiger, whether it was Rory McIlroy or Jordan Spieth or DeChambeau or Brooks Koepka, whoever. I mean, there's a million great golfers, but there's nobody out there that impacts the ratings, that impacts the viewership the way Tiger has and still does. Even if he's remotely close to contention, you see the numbers spike. It's pretty amazing. But is that, do you look at golf and say they haven't found the right guy yet, they haven't promoted the right guy yet, or it's just unreasonable to expect anybody to be anything close to what Tiger was?
I think it's kind of all of the above. It is unreasonable to think that somebody's going to be Tiger, because there was only one Tiger, just like there was only one Jack Nicklaus. Now, Nicklaus had the benefit of, at the beginning of his career, he had Player and Palmer, he had Watson, he had Miller, he had some really good golfers around him. So when Johnny Miller shot his 63 at the U.S. Open, that was big news, and everybody knew what Johnny Miller looked like, right? Everybody knows what Tom Watson looks like.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have that right now. Rory McIlroy is not playing the kind of golf that people want him to play, right? As you said, the PGA wants him to play. Jordan Spieth, he's hitting balls on the roof. I mean, he's relatable because that's what I do, right? So it's like, all right, Jordan Spieth and I, we're the same guy. So there is nobody, and they better hope that it's not this Oberg guy who played so well, and who knows how to pronounce A with a little, the cap, peak on it or whatever at the top.
Apparently it's O.
E-R-G as Oberg. Yeah. You're right. I have no idea. But they better hope that the next one's an American who becomes dominant. But Scheffler's a great golfer. He's just not a great personality.
Are you saying golfer?
Golfer.
There we go.
Yeah, I mean, he's just, it's not a knock on him. I mean, he's won two of the last three Masters. He's the number one golfer in the world for 80 weeks, yet he couldn't be more anonymous.
Yeah.
He's the only thing that you can say about him other than his excellence is the fact that he's got horrible footwork. And it was funny. I saw a meme on Monday that had, every hacker at the driving range on Monday. And he's trying to, hit like Scheffler, moving their feet. Well, if he can do it, I can do it. Mm-hmm. So it's that's not what's going to happen. So it's right now it's and you saw the numbers, right? Beginning of the week, first two days, really good ratings for ESPN.
Yeah.
Better than they've had. Why? A lot of Tiger.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 days, it fell off. And the Sunday, not good ratings at all because no Tiger.
You know, I think it's so difficult now. A lot of people would say hitting a pitch in Major League Baseball, maybe, I mean, the ball's in motion, all kinds of junk and everything. But to be able to make a little white ball just go, and especially at Augusta where, you know, they say that if to practice for those greens, you just go putt in your driveway, you know, on cement, yeah, because it's so ridiculous. And you see how the pin placement and how you get punished for you know, really good shots. But I don't know. That's, to me, the draw, I think, Michael. And I don't know if you agree, but I feel like that's the hardest thing to do. You know, I mean, I know that the ball just sits there. It's not moving or it's not a knuckleball or anything like that. But still, just to make that go, you know, 380 yards in the middle of the fairway and cut it and fade it and all that. I mean, that to me is that looks like the hardest thing to do in all of sports.
Come on, there's nothing to it. No, my favorite thing is watching a guy hit a 25-foot putt that is heading directly at the hole, and the last 2 inches moves to the left.
Yeah.
So it's like, how in the hell do you read that? That's impossible. I still say hitting a baseball is the hardest thing. The ball's coming in at 100 miles an hour, spinning like crazy, dipping, diving. It's a round ball. You got a round bat. How that's the toughest thing to do, I would say. But Augusta National, and here's what people don't realize about it, because they don't, not on purpose, but they don't show this well on the broadcast. The changes in elevation as you go up, down on those holes, it's remarkable. You don't have any flat lies anywhere. There, you hit a great tee shot. Look at that. Oh, 320 yards. You really mashed that one. What's he look like for number two, Dottie? Well, he's got a downhill lie. There's a gopher sitting there thumbing his nose at him, and he's got to put it over 75 feet of trees in order to get it on the green where he can have a real putt.
Yeah, it's pretty it is amazing. Well, and that, especially that golf course. I mean, it's just crazy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I love the fact they did $70 million worth of apparel business during the 4 days there, something like that, something absurd.
Jeez. Wow. Yeah, I was just, I'm not the golf fan that probably you are, Michael, or a lot of people are, but I watched some of it over the weekend, and I saw some of the ratings for the first 2 days, as you pointed out, where Tiger was in contention to an extent, and then it fell apart and the ratings went down. They weren't showing him. And I'm thinking that, man, there's nobody that can pop the ratings like he does. Even now when he's well past his prime, and I don't know that anybody expects him to win yet, people still tune in to watch him, which is good, but kind of bad for the sport because they don't have his heir apparent, or at least somebody who can move the needle, you know, not to the extent.
Yeah, they don't even show Mickelson anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, Mickelson is a complete persona non grata. He's turned into a supervillain. So I don't know what you're going to do. I watch it because I like to watch them play golf, because I try to go out and play golf. It's usually a catastrophe, but there's always one shot that I hit that has me coming back. So I watch them and say, maybe I can do that someday. Or close to it.
Well, Michael, it looks like the NCAA has meted out their policies with Michigan. You know, it looks like they're done with the suspensions. Or
they still have the one portion of it that involves Harbaugh that is yet to be.
Yeah,
yeah, but okay. I mean, what are they going to do? Suspend him from the NFL?
Oh, he's going to be taught a lesson. Don't you worry about it.
Yeah. What?
Oh, I know.
That's
I understand that. But no, here's the thing, and it's, you know, my friends. And my Michigan friends are engaging in what is known as whataboutism, right? What about Kansas? Bill Self was doing this.
Yeah.
Look, Michigan screwed up several ways. Number one, there was a dead period during COVID, and they were still recruiting. Number two, they had analysts on the field. You're only supposed to have the coaches on the field, the hired staff members, the 10 coaches on the field coaching. Now, anybody who knows anything about college football coaching knows that the analysts are absolutely on the field. Well, those knuckleheads got caught. All right. Three, they lied about stuff. NCAA hates that. So you put it together. Is it enough with what's going on now where guys are showing up to signing day in Lamborghinis to say, well, this is a horrible thing and blah, blah, blah. No, but they broke the rules. And comparatively, other than the shame of being on probation, they don't have a really bad deal here. 3 years probation. There'll be some recruiting restrictions, you know, slap on the wrist for the home visit or something. And that's that. They don't lose any money as a fine. They don't lose any bowl money or the chance to play in the tournament. They don't have to forfeit any wins. So take your punishment and shut your mouth and move on.
I'd say you might be the rare Michigan alum to have that attitude. I think most will engage in what you talked about, the whataboutism, and, well, yeah, we did that. But what about those guys? Well, they're worse.
Yeah.
You know, that seems to be the case when somebody gets in trouble or accused of something.
And look, the reason I can do this is I rip every team that breaks the rules. So what kind of a hypocrite would I be if I'm sitting there saying, oh, well, Michigan is different. They're special, and they shouldn't have anything. You know, it's like, no, you did dumb stuff. You broke the rules. You got caught. Shut your mouth and prepare for 2024. Go out in the portal and get some offensive linemen, some linebackers, and another cornerback to be across from Will Johnson.
Who's going to be the player that we watch on the draft this year in the first round that's expected to be, I don't know, top 10, top 5 perhaps, that invariably the camera's on them at pick 15 and then pick 20, and then they start speculating, well, this team needs a player like him, and there's always that one player that you feel terrible for. They're stuck in the green room. The camera's on them after every single pick because they're falling. Who's that guy this year?
I'm not a draft expert. I like to watch it. It's a lot of fun. But I'll give you two. Brock Bowers, the tight end from Georgia.
Really?
Okay. If he doesn't get taken by the Jets at 12 to be, you know, somebody that they can work with the crazy person. I mean, Aaron Rodgers. he could fall, and then it'll be interesting to see what happens with Michael Penix, because he's got a lot of talent and a lot of things going for him, and I just don't see somebody saying we want him. Right now. Now, that could change. We got 2 weeks until the draft, or less than 2 weeks. Wow.
Yeah.
Until the draft. But I hope that he, you know, that somebody takes a chance on him, because I think he's tough. He's got a giant arm, and he knows how to win.
Sorry, Dave, one more on that. Who's the guy you think could bust out in terms of the quarterbacks that could be the one that is the next Zach Wilson or Mac Jones? Is it – because I feel like – Drake May and Jaden Daniels get little to no conversation about them. It's just sort of a foregone conclusion. It's going to be Williams, Daniels, May, or Williams, May, Daniels in some order there. And then I guess J.J. McCarthy now has moved his way into the fourth quarterback spot. But these guys aren't all going to hit. Is there one that you look at that has more bust potential than the other?
I think all four of them have significant bust potential. And Caleb Williams is a runaround guy. Okay. That doesn't always work in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Drake May's got some questions about him. Daniels had one really, really good year, and you start to say, all right, is he somebody who's going to be not a bust, but not as great as you think? And then McCarthy has not so far, you know, he hasn't thrown the ball a lot. He's got the skills. He's got a big arm. He's a great leader. He can run. But, you know, is there a reason why Harbaugh said we don't want him throwing at 35, 40? Times a game, other than the fact that he's a troglodyte and he wants to win with an offensive line and a running game? I think all four of them have some real questions.
You know, that's interesting, because today I was saying, I think if Bowers and Penix are there, that the Seahawks take them, just because I think they're the best players available at that point. But
Bowers.
Well, I think if either
don't
one
you
of
need
them
some
are
linemen?
There.
Don't you need some linemen?
We don't draft based on need. Not here in Seattle.
Okay.
I mean, he didn't do last year anyway. I mean, as far as with the corner, you know, took Devin Witherspoon. We had three, four, you could argue, really good corners. But yeah, I think it's interesting. And I also think that teams are going to panic, Michael, with the quarterbacks, because it's not in the near future. There's not seen as being a whole, you know, a lot of really good quarterbacks coming up. And it just seems like every year somebody screws up. That's why we get why we call it a crapshoot. I feel like in the NFL, like these teams and these guys, they claim to be disciplined and this and that, and then the day gets there and they lose their minds and they end up overdrafting a guy. And you know, and how many of these quarterbacks? There's the six that we're talking about. What would you say? How many of those actually are busts?
I'd say the over under is 3.5. Okay, I mean, because you got to go back to 83, right? So you had Marino, you had Elway, Pat O'Brien played well. Tony Eason was all right for a while. I forget the fifth who was in that crew. That was a great draft. You know, you got five starters, a quarterback out of that. You don't see that anymore. You know, we're already moving on from Justin Fields. We're already moving on from a lot of guys who were, you know, Malik Wills. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
You know, we think Anthony Richardson's the guy in Indianapolis, but he could be looking for work after next year.
Yeah, it's when it comes to quarterbacks, man, there's the desperation. Everybody wants that franchise guy, but the more, I mean, we brought up Zach Wilson. You're talking top five picks, him, Mac Jones. You look at Mitchell Trubisky. Yep. You could look at, you know, just it's an amazing number of misses when it comes to the quarterback spot. So I love
that. And we've talked about it at length on the program about why. And there's so many different variables at that position versus other ones. It's just, you know, in college, a lot of these things are not translatable, what works in college versus the pros.
Right. Hey, switching topics here. I saw I'm sure you saw this, the numbers that came out for the WNBA draft had a record 2.45 million viewers. Last year's draft had 572,000. I mean, so that's record. Their all-time record was in 2004 when Diana Taurasi went number one, and it was 601,000. So 2.45 million. Is this a recency bias? Is this fresh off the tournament, the Caitlin Clark hype? Because there was no intrigue. Everybody knew she was going number one. So you weren't tuning in to see, oh, is she going to go one, two, or three? That was a foregone conclusion. So do you think this is just sort of capitalizing on the hype, or do you think they've sort of built the brand around her and she's going to carry that over into the WNBA season? What do you think?
Well, I think it's a variety of things, and you use the word built. Women have been saying, and supporters of women's sports have been saying for years, that once the sports media started covering women's sports the way it covered men's sports, it would start to take off. And this year, that's what happened. You started to see women's games on prime time on Saturday nights. You started to see coverage on SportsCenter of college games, not just ones that ESPN was showing. You started to see coverage of the players, the personalities, the conflicts, the drama, which is what fuels men's basketball, right? And what do we see? We see the highest rated basketball game of any kind, men's or women's, pro or college, in 7 years. The final game of the NCAA tournament, the women's NCAA tournament. So a lot of it is America's being introduced to these players. Before, there were great players. I mean, Tamika Catchings, Shamika Holdscaugh, Sue Bird, Stewie. There have been great players in the women's game. But nobody knew who the heck they were because they weren't being televised, they weren't being reported on, and they weren't being shown as people that you should be caring about, especially if you're a guy. So I think that there's a lot that has gone into it. Now, Caitlin Clark enters the WNBA with more pressure on her than probably any woman's athlete since Billie Jean King played Bobby Riggs. And I'm not saying that frivolously. If 36 of the 40 Indiana Fever games are going to be on television, they've already started selling like special game tickets for like when they played Diana Taurasi or whatever. She goes in there being expected to save the WNBA from the who cares that prevails every single season. You know, it was funny. For the 25th anniversary, I read an article written by a woman about the 25th anniversary saying to men, shame on you for not watching the WNBA. Didn't give us a single reason other than we should do it. There was you want to see the rivalry between the Sparks and the Aces. You want to see the Sky against the Mystics. No, it was shame on you. You're a bad person because you don't want to watch women's sports. Now you got a reason.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Yeah. By the way, people are saying you forgot Jim Kelly in that draft. I guess.
Oh, is that right?
All right, that was the fifth. All right, so even the great Homer nods, as my father used to say when he got something wrong or omitted something.
He is El Hombre Michael Bradley with us every single Tuesday at 5 o'clock. You find him here. You can also find him on Twitter at Daily Hombre. So interact at your own risk, as I tell you each and every time. Michael, as always, great stuff. We appreciate it. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next week.
So long, suckers.
There he is.
I like what he brought up there because I was kind of annoyed by that also. That was like, this is a good game. The women's game in college, I haven't watched a lot of WNBA, but I loved watching the very, women's game.
Very and, fundamentally sound.
Yeah, they execute, they run offenses, they great assists, things like that. And then you had, but I did it because I wanted to, but then you had these people that were like trying to hector you into it, like just, yeah, don't. Yeah, don't give me a reason why. Just tell me to watch it.
Just you should. You're a bad person if you don't.
Right. And it's like some civic duty or something. I'm like, no, the reason why you watch it is because it's damn good.
Yeah. I want to be entertained with whatever I'm watching, movies, sports, whatever it is. Yeah. There needs to be a reason for it. All right. Our thanks to Michael Bradley. The Mariners are hosting the Reds tonight in the T-Mobile Park. Roof will be still sunny out, as I see from across the room here. So I'm going to say open. I'm going with open.
Do we have Bob's numbers from last year? But as far as accuracy,
it was
100%.
It was
100%.
Yeah, high 90%.
100%.
Boy. Yeah.
I'm going to go.
We're rolling. Rolling. I mean, the sun is still out there. I don't know what the weather forecast is for later, but it's looking pretty good right now. So I'm going to say they'll keep that open. I don't know how warm it is out there currently, but yeah, let's hope for some more offense tonight. We need some more Mariner offense. They put two games like that together. I'm not saying they need to score 9 tonight, Dave, but if they win and they put up, say, 5 or 6 and they, you know, get a nice effort on the mound, we're coming in feeling pretty darn good. And there'll be another game. We'll be on after the day game tomorrow. So we'll have two games to talk about.
Yeah, that'll be a beautiful thing. I think Polanco's going to come up big again.
You think so? So yes. You're saying big night for Polanco. I'm calling Julio's first home run of the season by the time we're on the air. After the game tomorrow. So there we go. Lefko anxiously awaiting that 30 signal. There
everybody
it is.
Everybody's on the stream. This somehow means 30. It's the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
All right. That does it for us. Want to thank our guest today, El Hombre Michael Bradley and Mike Blowers, for joining us on the program. So if you missed any of today's show, you can find it on the podcast page at seattlesports.com. Just click the podcast tab, scroll down to our picture and click on that, and it's waiting for you there. Each and every night. Mariners coming up next. We'll talk to you tomorrow after the game with Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports on 710.